Okay, so Rebecca Stalen was interviewing Ian Anderson in the library at Halsey Manor on the 25th of April 2015. Okay, Ian, start by saying a bit about yourself. Where were you born?
Weston-super-Mare.
And when?
Long time ago, 1947.
And what did your parents do?
Very little music in the family. My mother did play the piano, but my father didn't like it as a piece of furniture, so he made her get rid of it. My father worked all his life, apart from the war, for Imperial Tobacco, but in his spare time was a wood man. So he built boats and he sailed boats, and he later in his life did a lot of wood turning, and when he got a dust allergy, took to wood carving, which is why some of his pieces are now littered around Halsey Manor.
So tell me about that.
They're littered around Halsey Manor. No, my mum died last summer, and I was actually looking for somewhere for them to go. And I put, there's two figures, there's a male folk dancer and a female folk dancer, and I actually put pictures of them on Facebook and said, would anybody like these as maybe trophies for, like, best dancer at a Cayley or something like that? And several people said, you should take them to Halsey, at which point Paul James popped up and said, have you ever been to Halsey Manor? And I had to admit that I hadn't, even though I was born that far away. And Jeff Rye, who's one of the founders, I was at school with his daughter, and they ran the local folk club in Weston-super-Mare. But I had a... I think I had a false impression, or maybe I had the correct impression, but it's changed. Because I sort of thought it was a place where old 1950s EFDSS folk dancers went to die.
And what do you think now?
I think it's heading for being up there as a sort of energy centre with Cecil Sharp House, from what I've been seeing. Now, I don't know how recently that is and how much people like Paul had to do with it, but it's clearly had a very major trajectory in recent years. So I came down last summer and was completely blown away. So came back with a box of all my dad's wood carvings, and they happily stuck them around the building.
Now, they're not the only carvings here associated with your father, are they? Are there other carvings as well?
I see what you mean. Not just those folk dancers. No, there's a bunch of things. There's, there's a rambling Pac-Man, and there's a wood turner, and did I give them the rugby players? I can't remember now. There's a horse's head here in the library.
Yeah.
But my dad was the least folk person you could imagine. I mean, he used to go a lot to the old Somerset craft fair, so he would have encountered that side of folk culture, but he wasn't the slightest bit interested in music.
So how did you get interested?
The shortcut is one Friday lunchtime when I was 14, I went into the chemistry lab at school where they held a record club, and at the point I walked in, somebody put on a Muddy Waters record, and it literally blew my mind. And I kind of grabbed the boy who owned it, who was a bit older, by the lapels and said, what is this? Where can I get more of this? Where can I meet people who can tell me about this stuff? And he pointed me at the local art school coffee bar in Weston-super-Mare, where all the beatniks went. And in the space of weeks, my life was entirely changed. And everything I've done since then has been directly because of that moment.
So what did you experience in that coffee bar?
People with beards and banjos and records of people like... representative samples of practically everything that I didn't know existed then that have been major parts of my life. The folk records of the day, the first Bob Dylan album, lots of blues records, jazz from, you know, King Oliver right through to Charlie Parker, David Graham... Lord Buckley, Lambert Hendricks and Ross, Miriam Makeba, the first African music I ever, all in the space of 1 week, Joan Baez. And my head exploded, and I didn't want to be a schoolboy anymore. I wanted to be a beatnik. It was quite difficult when you're 14, but yeah.
And what about the actual live folk scene? How did you get engaged with that?
Well, what I then discovered was that where everybody disappeared to on Friday nights and Saturday nights across the road from the coffee bar was a pub where there were sessions in the back room, which, because it didn't have a bar in, I could go in into. So I discovered people playing the guitar and singing big Bill Brunsey songs and all the folk standard stuff of the day. And so I did a summer holiday job and bought a guitar and learnt to play by watching the people in the pub and stuff like that. I, to this day, don't know whether back then every town had one of those or whether I was really lucky, but I was really lucky either way. And old boys would wander in with phono fiddles and musical saws and join in with this session, you know. And the main sort of local icon was this guy whose nickname was Beetle, not spelt with two E's, who'd been in a skiffle group on 6-5 Special, so he was the local hero, and he could play, back then we thought, just like Big Bill Brunsey, you know. So.
And you have a connection with trad folk for your family, don't you?
Well, yes, I didn't discover this till much, much later, that my great, let me get this right, mother, great-grandmother, had some songs collected from her by Vaughan Williams in 1904 in Horsham, including a song called Lord Allanwater, which this person sat next to me, Katie Rose, sings on for me on our more recent record. And then later still, that on my father's side, there are a lot of people from the Somerset Levels, but this, all the while I was growing up, this was kept very quiet because my grandmother was a real snob. And her mother came from the Somerset Levels, and they'd all been peat diggers and pub owners and things like that. And never, all the photos were destroyed. You never found out anything about that. But my mother, who was the queen of genealogy, started digging because she hated my grandmother as well. And so to spite her, she dug up all the dirt on the relatives. And there's a lot of Norrises in there, and she eventually, she's got this amazing family tree, which I managed to trace all the way up and along and down to the Charles Norris who Cecil Sharp collected from in Chatwick Station in 1908-9, thereabouts. The False Bride, which Katie also sings on this record. False Bride, Tanyard Side, and one other that's now slipped my memory, but Malcolm Taylor dug out the manuscripts for me and photocopied them for me, so...
It must be quite special when you discovered that.
Yeah, well, when it was found out about my great-grandmother, Emily Agnes Steers, I rang up my great friend Bob Copper and told him this, and he said, "Ah, we always knew you were one of us."
I'm going to make this my last question. You've said that you hadn't been to Halsey before last year.
Yeah.
And I just want to know what Halsey means to you, if anything.
Well, it's now, I'm so impressed. I mean, actually, at the point when I came down here, my mum had just died. I had this stuff for my dad to bring down here. That's why I came. And I knew I was going to inherit a bit of money from my selling my mother's house in Weston-super-Mare that wasn't going to be enough to buy somewhere where I currently live in Clifton in Bristol. And the day I came down here, I was so blown away. And I was driving around and I went straight back home and I looked on Rightmove and I discovered that I could buy somewhere around here just about for the money that I was going to get. And I very nearly bought a little house in Stagumba. But then wonderful miracles have happened and my girlfriend who lives in Cambridge has decided to move to Bristol. We're going to buy a flat between us in Bristol, so it doesn't actually happen. But you see, I probably shouldn't say this. This is probably heresy. No, keep... My shortly after the stuff of the coffee bar and the pub and started playing and getting to the point where I didn't mind singing in front of other people, people said to me, "There's a folk club in Weston-super-Mare, you should go to that." So me and my sidekick who played blues harmonica when we were 17, I suppose, went along to this folk club in Weston-super-Mare, which was run partly by Jeff Rye and his wife, and their circle, who were EFDSS people of the day. I'm sure very well-meaning. And we went in there, and my impression was it was full of little old ladies knitting. They were probably in their 30s, you know, but when you're 17. And when we played, and frankly, they hated us. Yeah, they were very polite, but it was quite obvious they hated us, these sort of upstarts who wanted to be beatniks doing blues and stuff like that. and the guests were the Yetis. Now, I'm afraid at the age of 17, and the Yetis were probably in their mid to late 20s, and they were rather portly and had beards and played piano accordions. And we thought they were the biggest practical joke that anybody had ever played on this. And we thought it was awful. And I thought, if this is a folk club, I'm never going to go to one again. And so I didn't for about another year until I left home and moved into Bristol. And I had a girlfriend who said, you should come to the folk club. Oh, I'm not going to one of those. They're awful. No, they're not. They're really good. No, they're awful. And she insisted that I went to the Ballads and Blues, which was at the Bathurst Hotel, which is now the Louisiana in Bristol. And I went along, and all the floor singers were really good. The king of the floor singers was Fred Wedlock, and the guest for the night was Tom Paley. And it was, oh, this is different from that other one. So then I started going every week. Shortly after that, I discovered that amongst the other people who used to go there were Paul and Angela Carter. Angela Carter, the writer. Paul Carter, who was an early director of Topic Records, who ran a fearsomely purist traditional folk club in Clifton. And so I started encountering that side of the folk scene. But basically, it's all run and run and run ever since. But I'm afraid that Jeff Rye nearly prevented me from ever going to folk club again. It wasn't his fault. They meant well. It was just like, and I was a bumptious 17-year-old. You know, I was probably as stupid as could be. But finally, 50 years later, got to Halsey Manor, which he was probably in the process of setting up at that very point. Yeah. But you get there in the end.
You do. Thank you very much.